Support for On Point and the following message come from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Home plays a big role in your life. That's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. It lets you apply simply and understand the entire mortgage process fully, so you can be confident that you're getting the right mortgage for you. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/onpoint.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm David Folkenflik, and this is On Point. House Republican Speaker Paul Ryan has been in Congress for just shy of two decades, and he's been described as a young man on the rise for that entire time. Ryan is 48, seemingly in his political prime, and yet he jolted Capitol Hill yesterday with his announcement that he'll be giving up his job when his term expires to head home to Janesville, Wisconsin.
I will be retiring in January, leaving this majority in good hands with what I believe is a very bright future.
He said what most retiring politicians say. Ryan says he wants to spend more time with his family. Those who know him best say he really means it. But there's no way around it. Ryan's choice says volumes, not just about his own political legacy, but about the state of the GOP and the Trump era. This hour on Point, Speaker of the House Paul Ryan stepped down and what it means for the GOP. You can join us on air or online. What did you see in Paul Ryan's decision? How do you rate his tenure as Speaker? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining me first from Washington is Lisa Desjardins, a congressional correspondent for PBS NewsHour. Lisa, thanks so much for coming back.
My pleasure. Hi, David.
So tell me a little bit, Lisa, set the scene for us. What was it like on Capitol Hill yesterday when Paul Ryan, one of the real defining figures of the Hill, says he's out of there?
It was a day we came in expecting for to be a big policy day on things like the farm bill, not the drama that would unfold very quickly yesterday morning. Given that, though, there have been rumors for a long time, and many have known, that Speaker Ryan was considering stepping down. The announcement wasn't a surprise, but yet there was a very emotional response from Republicans, I think in part because his speech to them behind closed doors, we're told, was emotional, that he did talk about how he has been a weekend dad for 20 years, and now as Speaker has been a Sunday-only dad, and apparently choked up a little bit, as did other members. All of that said, there was also another complicating emotion that I picked up on, David, which was almost a sense of relief that Republicans now know a little bit more about what's ahead, and they can deal with the future of their leadership, or at least start to, because this question of Ryan's future has been answered.
So let's try to take a few of these things in turn. First, let's think about what he said about his family. Speaking to reporters yesterday as he announced his retirement, which will happen next January, as we said, Ryan invoked his family. And Ryan talked about the fact that his father had died when he was a teenager and how much that shaped his life. And he wants now to be present for his children before they go off to college.
If I am here for one more term, my kids will only have ever known me as a weekend dad. I just can't let that happen. So I will be setting new priorities in my life.
So this is something that's clearly real for him. It's not simply an excuse. It's meaningful for him. And yet you think about Paul Ryan coming in, a guy who had led an important committee on the Hill, a guy who had been his party's vice presidential candidate not so many years ago, and somebody who set a tone, I think, for what he wanted the Congress to achieve. I'd love to play a clip from that, clip number three, as we talk about the way in which he set a tone for Congress when he first came in October 2015.
We need to move from an opposition party to being a proposition party. Because we think the nation is on the wrong path, we have a duty to show the right one. Our next speaker has to be a visionary one.
Lisa, as you think about covering Congress, which you do every day, was he able to set a visionary path for the House of Representatives? Was he able to shape a new understanding of what Republican leadership would be on Capitol Hill?
I think that's going to be debated for some time. And obviously, his term of office isn't over yet, so there's still time on the clock for him, as he knows. However, I think it seems like the answer at this moment is no, not in his 2.5 years as speakership. What he did, however, was stem some of the bleeding over the very sharp internal divides in this conference. He was able to get through a very difficult situation, a health care reform bill to repeal and replace Obamacare. That failed in the Senate, but Ryan did the heavy lift in the House and got it through there, which was remarkable. He was able to keep his conference from going to complete war with itself, but a greater vision, no, that did not happen.
Let's talk about some of those divisions within the conference, not because the press simply likes to feast upon controversy and internal dissent, although God knows we do in the press, but also because it's meaningful, because it was why his predecessor, John Boehner, with whom she had a pretty good relationship, ultimately left the House and became increasingly, I think, vocal about that fact, that the internal divisions, the continuing seeming push to the right of each new and fresh crop of Republican lawmakers in the House made it that the folks who had thought of themselves as conservative firebrands kept getting outflanked and unable to satisfy those people within their own party. How did Paul Ryan handle this, given that sort of upfront he acknowledged that that would be a dynamic he had to deal with?
Ryan tried to make conservative goals sound mainstream and tried to unify his conference around that. He had his plan called A Better Way to do that. He really thought that they could make a Jack Kemp, his mentor-like pitch, that we are better for the poor than Democrats.
And let's just pause to acknowledge Jack Kemp was the housing secretary under President Reagan and was truly conservative, but as you say, really interested in social policy from a conservative standpoint.
That's right. And that really was, you know, the North Star for Paul Ryan, was that idea that Republicans could lead on social policy, but he was never able to sell that to his conference. The other story, and this is much less sexy, David, but really what he tried to do is also unify his conference over process. He came into office as Speaker promising so-called regular order, which basically gives more members opportunities to propose amendments, gives them more time to debate bills. He promised that he would do that, and he did not. In the end, because he did not do it. In the end, because of the dynamics, the only way he could pass bills was to, as we saw with the omnibus just last month, have them revealed overnight and have large votes within sometimes just 12 hours on major legislation. That is not what he pledged to do, and that is something that did anger especially many conservatives in his conference.
Well, nothing journalistically sexier than process, but nonetheless, it sounds like it's actually important for the implications he had. It also sounds like it sets a bit of an expiration date on Republican speakers. If he were to be succeeded by Republican speaker, it doesn't sound as though it resolves that dynamic.
No, not at all. There are the two main candidates for speaker, which are his number two, Kevin McCarthy of California, and his number three, Steve Scalise of Louisiana. Just this morning, Steve Scalise went on Fox News and said, I will never run against Kevin McCarthy. We are good friends. But you have to take that at an arm's length. There's not a declared race right now, but there is an undeclared race. Both of these men are interested in the job. And one of the determining factors here will be if Republicans lose or keep the majority. If they lose the majority, Kevin McCarthy may look for another job elsewhere. He's close with the White House. And perhaps Steve Scalise steps in. But you're right. Both of them have a conference that is divided. There is a chance if they lose the majority, though, David, it could become less divided because it could become more conservative. They would lose some of those moderates, most likely, if they lose the majority.
It's an interesting point and a dynamic that gets played out again and again. Let's give the speaker his due. We have an excerpt of Speaker Ryan speaking to reporters yesterday about his achievements as Speaker of the House.
Probably the two biggest achievements for me are, first, the major reform of our tax code for the first time in 36 years, which has already been a huge success for this country. And that's something I've been working on in my entire adult life. Second, something I got much, much more invested on since becoming Speaker is to rebuild our nation's military. These I see as lasting victories that will make this country more prosperous and more secure for decades to come.
So before we get to the tax rewrite, which was a pretty major piece of legislation that did get through this Congress, and there aren't many pieces you can point to that, talk about what he means by rebuilding our nation's military. He said this morning on CBS to Gayle King that he had helped to restore what had been a hollowed out military. What is he saying, alluding to that the Congress did under his leadership that achieved that, and what does he mean by that?
This is that omnibus appropriations bill that they passed last month. It is one of the largest increases in spending by the federal government in recent years. And to do that, Republicans and Democrats had to work together because they needed Democratic votes in the Senate to pass a spending bill. So the Republicans, like Paul Ryan, were able to get a very large increase in military spending. I believe this year it's something like $80 billion of an increase. To get that, they agreed to Democrats' wish list, which was an increase in other domestic spending, some social programs, and for agencies. Now, that military spending is going across the board. I read the entire omnibus last week.
And bless you for that.
I'd like to hurt myself. Yes, right. And the military spending, a lot of it is for personnel. It does include a pay raise for our troops. A lot of it is for training, but there is a lot as well for equipment, new aircraft, new ships for the Navy. Mm-hmm. It is very wide-ranging and extensive.
You know, you pointed to something else, that this took what sounds like old-fashioned deal-making to get this done, and it took some Democratic priorities to be put in there for this to be assured passage in the Senate, which, you know, has different rules than the House. It has an even tighter margin there. It also meant that the cost of the bill went up. You know, I think of Paul Ryan as a textbook deficit hawk. In the Obama years, he always talked about the need for the deficit to come down. He talked this morning about how the House in his time always passed a bill, didn't mean it passed the Senate, but always passed a bill to force a balancing of the budget. That obviously didn't happen. But the bill that he pushed through, the bill that he cites, the bill that he's proud of, is one that increased, right, the size of the federal deficit. I think it's a nonpartisan government office. The Congressional Budget Office said that the budget deficit currently would reach $1 trillion in 2020. It sounds as though that's something that we're going to have to think about a little bit. We have been talking to Lisa Desjardins. She's congressional correspondent for PBS's NewsHour. House Speaker Paul Ryan is stepping down, leaving Washington. We're talking about what that means for the GOP, for the country, for the White House. You can join the conversation. Lisa, we want you to stand by. Wisconsin listeners, we definitely want to hear from you about your native son. What will the GOP leadership be without Ryan at the helm? What are the Republican Party? I'm David Folkenflik, and this is On Point.
Support for On Point and the following message come from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Chances are you're confident when it comes to your work, your hobbies, and your life. Rocket Mortgage gives you that same level of confidence when it comes to buying a home or refinancing your existing home loan. Rocket Mortgage is simple, allowing you to fully understand all the details and be confident you're getting the right mortgage for you. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/onpoint. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLS ConsumerAccess.org, number 3030.
Hey, it's Maria Hinojosa, host of NPR's Latino USA, the podcast that takes you inside the Latino conversation. Each week, we'll take you into one story that will fascinate and often surprise you. Listen to Latino USA on the NPR One app or wherever you listen to podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm David Folkenflik. We're talking about the turmoil in the GOP since House Speaker Paul Ryan announced yesterday that he's stepping down. Why don't you call us? Do you think Speaker Ryan held the line for the old school GOP? Did he keep politics on track during a chaotic time in Washington? Did he make a Faustian pact with President Trump, as his critics suggest? Follow us on Twitter and find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. My guests are Lisa Desjardins, correspondent for PBS NewsHour. Joining us now from Milwaukee is Charles Sykes. He's contributing editor at the Weekly Standard, host of the Daily Standard podcast. He's also a former Wisconsin political talk show host and journalist. Charlie, thanks for joining us today. Well, sounds like we're having a little trouble. We'll be getting back with Charlie in a little bit. Also joining the conversation from Newark, Delaware, is Kim Alfano. She's a Republican strategist and president and CEO of Alfano Communications. Welcome back to the show, Kim.
Hey, I'm here.
I'm delighted to hear it. Why don't we turn to you for a moment? You know, I think there's a lot of people thinking about Paul Ryan as a national leader, also think about him as a Republican leader. You are, you know, in the trenches when you think about Republican politics. What kind of leadership has he provided, and what kind of point or counterpoint has he provided to the president?
Well, I think he's been a very effective leader in a time when the job is like herding cats riding on squirrels. I mean, it's been an insane time for the Republican Party. And we have a, to say the least, dynamic president, an opinionated one. And, you know, the job of the speaker is to get the job done, not just to talk about it. And he's kind of successfully, you know, you can imagine him straddling two trucks going down the highway. He's successfully kept a foot in the conservative, you know, far conservative wing of the party, as well as keeping old school traditional Republicans in line. And he's gotten some things passed pretty remarkably. It hasn't happened in a long time. And you know, John Boehner would say he wasn't able to do it. And so for that, he should be commended. He was an effective speaker at a time of chaos.
We've got a call from Baltimore, Maryland. Janice, you have some thoughts on Paul Ryan's legacy?
Yes, I just wanted to say that I respect Paul Ryan's decision to go home and spend time with his family, but I do not think that Paul Ryan has been a true leader, because Donald Trump is not representative of how Americans should behave. He has done and said so many egregious things. Paul Ryan has not stood up and said, this is not the kind of behavior that is befitting for our children, or even us as adults. He has never said that. And until he says that, I will not be able to respect him as a true leader. I'm sure he's worked hard. I'm sure the job is difficult, but he should have stood up to Donald Trump. Take care.
Janice, thank you so much for your thoughts. We're getting a lot of feedback, not only about Paul Ryan, but about his relationship with the president. Joining us now from Milwaukee again, we're working with you, Charles Sykes, the contributing editor at the Weekly Standard, host of the Daily Standard podcast. As I mentioned, as a longtime Wisconsin political journalist and talk show host, Charlie, thanks for making the connection.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
So let's talk a little bit about Paul Ryan's relationship to the president. As somebody who's followed Ryan for a long time, how would you say this president and this presidency sits with the House Speaker?
Well, unfortunately, and I know other people have said this, and I've known Paul Ryan for more than 20 years. You know, we've been friends since before he went to Congress. I think Paul Ryan is a fundamentally decent, honorable man who, however, has made a Faustian bargain with this president.
So you think he made a pact that sold out in certain ways his principles?
Well, yeah, and I know that's a harsh thing to say, but in some ways there are the people who drink the Kool-Aid who are true believers, you know, in making America great again. Paul Ryan knew better, and was prepared to say so back in 2016, which makes his capitulation to Donald Trump all the more disappointing. And I think that, you know, that. That's unfortunately what he's going to be remembered for. He's going to be remembered for these contradictions, for talking about a politics of inclusion and aspiration, but then basically deciding that that tax cuts were so important that he was going to look the other way when Donald Trump said and did things that I know that Paul Ryan did not agree with and that were deeply offensive.
Charlie, let's actually go back to the summer of 2016, which you just mentioned to you. Then candidate Donald Trump was being sued in a federal district court for defrauding students at Trump University. Trump in several interviews said the judge presiding over the case, and that was U.S. District Judge Gonzalo Curiel, would be biased against him because he was of Mexican heritage. Obviously, Trump had made strong statements about immigration and the wall and many other things. Speaker Ryan at that time slammed Trump for those remarks.
Claiming a person can't do their job because of their race is sort of like the textbook definition of a racist comment. I think that should be absolutely disavowed. It's absolutely unacceptable.
You know, Trump certainly made other statements in the years since, in the time of his presidency, particularly around Charlottesville, that Ryan distanced himself from, condemned in a sense the emotion contained therein, but didn't really criticize the president as severely. Is that the kind of reaction you're talking about, or were there other things you meant as well?
No, that's exactly the kind of thing that I'm talking about. And there were a series of moments where Paul Ryan was willing to call out Donald Trump, to say that Donald Trump was not the authentic voice of conservatism, or certainly not the kind of conservatism that Paul Ryan wanted to practice. But all of that went away after the election. Now, I remember very well that incident where, you know, Paul Ryan denounced the textbook case of racism in very, very strong terms, but he continued to endorse Donald Trump. And there was the beginning of that fundamental contradiction. It's textbook racism, but let's still put this man in the Oval Office. And I don't think that Paul Ryan ever expected that Donald Trump was going to win the presidency. There's a report today in Politico suggesting that he was prepared to give a speech after the election, disavowing Trumpism and really distancing himself from Donald Trump. But, you know, what we've seen since January of 2017 was the decision by Paul Ryan essentially to look the other way, to enable Donald Trump to be his wingman in Congress. And unfortunately, that's going to be very much part of his legacy now.
Charlie, one last question in this vein. I think you just said a moment or two ago that that there was a moment in 2016 he was preparing himself to distance himself from the president during the race as opposed to after a loss. What happened there from your reporting that made him decide not to?
Well, remember, he did right after the Access Hollywood video came out. Donald Trump was due to come and have a rally with Paul Ryan the very next day here in Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm.
And Paul Ryan disinvited him. Now, think about that. You have the Speaker of the House disinviting the nominee of his party. And then the next week he had the conference call where he said, look, I'm basically done with Donald Trump. I'm not going to defend Donald Trump anymore. But as we've seen, what happened once Donald Trump won that election – Ryan and others basically decided that they were going to go along. You know, when I wrote my book, the first quote that I used in the book was from W.B. Yeats, "The best lack all conviction, while the worst are full of passionate intensity." And I was very much thinking of Paul Ryan and folks like Steve Bannon when I wrote that Paul Ryan could have been the voice of conscience. He could have stood up and said, you know, denounced many of the things that Donald Trump did, including after Charlottesville. The fact that he chose not to do it because he wanted to get tax cuts passed, I think is a tragedy and a failure on his part.
Tough words from an old Wisconsin friend of the departing House Speaker. Kim Alfano, you're a Republican strategist. You think about these things all the time. Clearly, the tax cut was a priority. Whether one criticizes or praises Paul Ryan for his stewardship, it was a significant priority, the first thing he pointed to as his accomplishment. Does that achievement, that signal achievement, that major piece of legislation outweigh whatever reservations one might have about the kinds of intellectual compromises Charlie Sykes is describing?
Well, I think that when Donald Trump was elected, Republicans had to come to terms with whether they were comfortable with separating theater from action. Donald Trump is absolutely very, theatrical. You want to watch him and what he's doing, but the work of the Congress is it has to be action. It has to be getting things done. And with the election of both the Senate, the House, and the presidency, that is an opportunity that as Republicans, you know, we've longed for. And there it was in our hands, and we had to decide, do we seize on that opportunity? Like Paul Ryan said, 36 years without a tax plan, you know, trying at least, you know, passing in the House healthcare reform, things that just have been bogged down for so long. Do you seize on that moment to do what's right for the American people, what you believe in your heart and soul is right and will change lives? Or do you get into a theatrical debate over morality and then let go that opportunity that's taken so long to come to? And I think it's a difficult thing for all of us who believe in the policies that are you know, being put forth. They almost had to act as a separate team and deal with Donald Trump as a third party in a lot of ways. But, you know, I think he is an honorable, decent man. He is a good guy. I mean, anybody you talk to will say that. He is a genuine, honest, decent guy. It can't have been easy for him to do what he was doing, but I think he made a moral choice not to ignore what Donald Trump was doing, but to do what was right and get something done for people that will actually change their lives, put money in their pockets, keep people from poverty, you know, try to do the things that he went to Congress to do for 20 years.
It sounds as though in some ways Trump has made things a little more complicated on a number of fronts. The speaker granted an interview this morning to CBS This Morning host Gayle King. She asked Ryan about a photo that President Trump tweeted out last night of himself surrounded by members of the congressional leadership, all smiling, all thumbs up, all older white men. Here's how that exchange went.
So when I look at that picture, I have to say, I don't feel very celebratory. I feel very excluded.
Well, I don't like the fact that you feel that way.
Mm-hmm.
And we need more minorities, more women in our party. And I've been focusing on that kind of recruitment.
For those who don't watch CBS, worth noting, Gayle King is probably one of America's most prominent African-American TV news hosts. Lisa Desjardins, how much did has President Trump complicated the task of Paul Ryan, among others, to ensure that Republicans may remain a majority party on the Hill?
Oh, I mean, to a very large degree. I think that it would be a mistake to look to judge what's going to happen in the fall by the president's approval ratings alone. The president's approval ratings don't affect him, but they affect his party. But I think there's also the intangibles of the president's different crusades, one of which is immigration, and another one of which is sort of his pushback against women who have accused him of sexual assault and sexual harassment. And I think those are two very prime groups of voters that Democrats believe they can activate this fall and that they think that this kind of potential Democratic wave will come from. Add to that, we also have a very large conversation about guns in this country right now. The president is on a very conservative side of that. Democrats think they can activate young people who want more gun control. All of
sure.
these things are a real problem for his Republican conference. And just to speak to sort of Kim's point about the speaker and the difficult choices he had to make in dealing with the president, it is true that they wanted to get to govern. However, every Republican Congress did have a decision to make on how they were going to interact with the president. The president is playing a poker game,
mm-hmm.
and leaders here could sort of give in to that, or they could also step up and play a tougher game with him as well. Ryan made one choice.
Charlie Sykes, you know, every time I see the guy, every time I see Paul Ryan talk about Trump or appear with Trump in one of those stage settings, you know, he often smiles, he's responsive, he nods, he listens well. And there's a point in the footage where he winces. There's a point where it seems to do him a certain degree of pain. You got to feel for him in this position, given that apparent dynamic. And it seems as though he's trying to push forward an agenda that he believes in. What else would you expect of a House Speaker of his party to do at this moment?
Well, in many ways, it's an insoluble problem when you have a problem like Donald Trump. But again, you know, there are choices to be made. You know, the Congress is a co-equal branch of government. You know, and I want to go back to this, the comments about, you know, the tax cut and everything. You know, again, another one of the disappointments of Paul Ryan, the contradiction, is the fact that here's somebody that talked about the national debt and for years, and I probably had dozens of conversations with him about the crisis of deficits and debts and entitlements, and yet he's leaving his speakership with $1 trillion a year deficits as far as the eye can see, having added trillions of dollars to the national debt. They could have had tax reform that would have been revenue neutral. So the compromises that he made were not just moral. And by the way, I think it somewhat trivializes what Donald Trump is doing to our culture, just to say that it is theatrical or mm-hmm. you know, theatrical debates about morality. The character of the president, the judgment of the president, the language of the president actually matters. These are real things. And I know that Paul Ryan knows that. But the compromises then were not just about Donald Trump's character and behavior. They also were in substance. And for a Republican Congress to have essentially completely abandoned fiscal conservatism, you know, shouldn't be overlooked as well, you know, for people who are saying, well, at least he got some policy wins. Well, the policy wins are to settle the next generation with what Paul Ryan used to describe as a debt bomb.
Mm-hmm. So, Charlie Sykes, in the 30 seconds we have left for you, was Paul Ryan's speakership a net plus for the Republicans, a net plus for the country, or did it ultimately let the country down?
I think we'll look back on this as as not a successful period for the Republican Party. I think the Trumpification of the Republican Party is going to have long-term consequences for the country and for Republican elected officials at every single level. So I don't think they're going to look back on it as a success. And unfortunately, he is going to be caught up in the shambolic presidency of Donald Trump. I think they're going to pay a huge price for it in November.
Kim Alfano, how would you do that?
I would say for what hand he was dealt, he managed it admirably. And I don't disagree with Charlie that the character of the president matters. But I think that you have to do what you need to do in your heart and soul to do what's right with what you have. And I think he tried to do that and did a good job at it.
Do you think, Kim Alfano, that he's set up his successor to be able to do that in some kind of substantive way?
No. It depends on who it is. But I think this is a lot more than even Donald Trump. I think the parties have been dissipating as teams for a long time. I think if we learned anything from Donald Trump, we've learned that personality is starting to outweigh party, and that, you know, hurting those cats is going to be hard. It's going to be cats on squirrels on something else that moves around fast.
Kim Alfano, Lisa Desjardins, cats and squirrels, please all stay with us. And let's put the question to our listeners, especially Republican ones. Where does the Republican Party go after Paul Ryan? Does this signal more momentum for Democrats in November? Charlie Sykes, we're going to have to relinquish you now. Thanks for making the time. But we're here. I'm David Folkenflik, and this is On Point.
Are you funnier than Fallon? More amusing than Aziz? More clever than Click and Clack? Well, if you've got an idea that'll make people laugh, enter WBUR's Next Great Show contest for a chance to get your show on the air. To find out more, go to WBUR.org/nextgreatshow.
This is On Point. I'm David Folkenflik. We're unpacking the political fallout from Speaker of the House Paul Ryan's surprise announcement that he will not seek re-election. What does his departure mean for the GOP, for this president, for the nation, for the upcoming elections? Follow us on Twitter and find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. My guests are Lisa Desjardins. She's congressional correspondent for PBS NewsHour, and the Republican strategist Kim Alfano. Thanks for sticking with us. I wanted to read a number of comments that we've gotten on our site. Lars Grant West posts a comment. He says, hard to listen to people talking about how great Paul Ryan is. It's difficult. He may be a nice guy, but the fundamental disconnect between his personality and his delivery and the Ayn Rand mentality that leaves a lot of the working class people always at the precipice of failure is hard to square. We also have some callers here I'd like to work in. Here's Jim calling from Charleston, South Carolina.
Hi, Dave. Thank you for taking my call. House Speaker Ryan, as well as his other conservative fiscal hawks, spent a career honing their knives and cutting every social program they can. Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security, any benefit any hard-working class person needed. And yet he's going to retire in January, and he's going to take his federal pension with him. After 20 years, how hypocritical he and these other so-called budget hawks are.
Well, thank you, Jim.
They got their health care.
Yeah. I apologize. Thank you, Jim, so much for offering that. I did want to take another call, this time from Madison, Wisconsin, not so far from Paul Ryan's hometown. Claire, you go ahead.
Hi, David. Thank you. Yes, I've been watching Paul Ryan for a long time. I don't believe for a New York minute this man is done with politics. I just think he's tired of being a Trump enabler, and he sees the train wreck coming. He hopped off the train. He's going to go and start fundraising, and I suspect he will primary Trump if Trump's still around. I think he'll try to run for pres in 2020.
And would you be happy to see him do it?
No.
So you've watched him a long time. You think of it's political, but not a supporter. What about that, Kim Alfano, your Republican strategist? We thought that Mitt Romney might have been done with electoral politics, but he looks like, in fact, he is running for Senate this year from Utah. Will Paul Ryan take a little while away, spend some time with his family back in Wisconsin, and then return to the scene?
You know, he's a young man, and he's a talented political player, and, you know, sure.
Sure. So that could happen. Lisa Desjardins, yeah. What do you think?
Anything's possible.
Yeah, we had a spirited discussion of this in our newsroom yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
Sources close to Speaker Ryan told us reporters yesterday that he does not expect to hold elected office ever again in his life. And this is what the Speaker himself is saying as well. However, he has been a very ambitious politician, and he has never, since he left college, he has not held a single job outside of Congress or think tanks that are trying to help elect Republicans to Congress. His very first job was working in the U.S. Senate right out of college. This has been his life. So I think there is a very real question as to if we take him at his word that he is leaving politics, is he someone who's going to change his mind in 2 years after he sees what that's like? There is obviously a lot of speculation, and the ultimate answer, David, is we really don't know.
We have a commenter from our website, posts under the name Sebastian Melmoth. Regardless of what you think of his politics, Sebastian writes, Ryan is a rare breed to give up power, and he's doing it to spend more time with his family. I know it is cliche, but in this case, it is probably genuine. One of the questions, of course, about his legacy, and this is often the case for politicians of both parties, is what happens in the aftermath. And if his party sustains or her party sustains, it's seen as a validation. And if they're washed away, it's seen as a kind of rebuke. At his press conference yesterday, one reporter asked whether he thought the GOP risked losing control of the House in the midterms next fall. Here is what Paul Ryan had to say.
We're going to have a great record to run on. We have a great economy, great accomplishments, more to do. And I really don't think that the American people are going to want to have the gridlock that the Democrats are promising. So I'm confident we can run through the tape and we can get this done.
What do you think, Kim Alfano? Are the Republicans poised to hold on to the House in this fall's midterm elections?
Well, there's no doubt that this is going to be a really difficult election cycle for us. However, I think, you know, we're at a time, again, not just because of Donald Trump and Paul Ryan, we're at a time in communication where everything is so scattered and so specialized that if candidates run as who they are, not as Donald Trump, but with the sort of unique personality of who they are in their own districts, answering their own district's needs and wants, they'll win. If they try to run on a bigger picture, maybe even national agenda that doesn't speak to what people care about in their district, then they might lose. So I think that the lesson of Trump is pretty simple. Run as who you are, be bold and proud of it, and hope that works with your district and dovetail it with your district. And people are really not too worried about the federal side if you can make a good case personally and at home.
Well, let me push back a little bit. Last month, there was a race that might not usually get a lot of attention. It was in Paul Ryan's home state of Wisconsin. A liberal Democrat won a Supreme Court seat back in March. And Wisconsin Governor Scott Walker, an ally of the speaker's, warned of a wave of Democratic victories after that win. Now, obviously, all these people are out fundraising after every win or loss. But nonetheless, he called for a Republican agenda of optimism and organization. What optimistic platforms do Republicans have right now in the age of Trump that would appeal to a non-core Trump voter?
Well, again, I think it has to be specialized to what people are looking for. But I think more economic prosperity. I think, you know, trying to do what Republicans have tried to do for years to free up the individual to do the best that they can possibly do. And I think, you know, the tone of Donald Trump is not optimistic, but the tone of the Republican Party can certainly be. And I don't think that's bad advice from Walker.
Lisa Desjardins, if you were a member of what's called the House Conference, which is what the Republicans called their side of the aisle, and you were somebody who felt real affinity for Trump's agenda and for Trump's style, and there are members of the House, it's my sense, who really do feel that way, who want to be on board. How did you look at Paul Ryan, his leadership, and what he pushed for?
Well, I don't think it's a significant change from how you looked at John Boehner. They felt that he was not bold enough, not conservative enough, did not, and in some ways that was more style over substance. This is a group that, like the president, feels you need to take tough stands, issue strong words. They're not as concerned about the short-term consequences of those kind of stances, things like a government shutdown. These are folks who believe that that's a tool in the Republican arsenal that they should use to get what they want policy-wise, and that is in opposition to Boehner and Ryan, who felt that that was going too far and that that would damage both the government but also the reputation of the Republican Party. So I think to some degree the Trump supporters in the Republican conference have not changed because of Trump. They've always opposed what they see as sort of too much milquetoast leadership here in Congress. However, I'm not sure they're the majority of the conference, but they are the loudest.
And if you're down the other side of Pennsylvania Avenue, you're the budget director, you're the chief of staff, you're the president. How do you look at what Paul Ryan has done for you?
If you're the president's budget director, I think that they in the OMB, they realize that Congress does not take the president's budget seriously.
Mm-hmm.
And to some degree, the president himself signed this very large spending increase that was against his stated goals as well. So I think there's been a thought in the White House that they can outmaneuver Congress when they need to. And I think we've seen that happen. And the result of that has been the inability for Republicans to move forward on big issues.
We've got a call from Appleton, Wisconsin, from Elizabeth. She's a college teacher. Elizabeth, go ahead.
Hi, David. I called in because last night I was speaking with my ethics student, and we were talking, of course, about Speaker Ryan, and I was really impressed with their insights and comments. They were talking about the idea that one of your guests was talking about, the idea that he had really voiced a strong conviction about his role and his duty as a leader, and then ultimately decided that he wanted to get things done and would essentially make a deal with the devil. And my students were saying that really he started out focused on his duty-based ethics, but he ended up just making a utilitarian decision. And one of my students, and it was interesting because my students are from both sides of the aisle. I have students who are actually union workers, and I have students who are former military. And they all concluded that integrity means you stick with it, even if it means you go down. And they all like him, and they seem to say they also thought that there's still things that he could do to show that integrity in the remaining time of his service, but that making the deal with the devil is not evidence of integrity, that's sort of selling out. I was really surprised at how mm-hmm. insightful they were.
Some might think that was, in some ways, Elizabeth, I guess, the tough obligation of the politician to get to the outcome desired. But it's the question of ethics and public leadership, a strong one, too. Thanks for your call. We're now going to go – strong representation from Wisconsin here. We're going to go to Monroe, Wisconsin. Art is on the line. Please go ahead.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. I wanted to put out there in the nicest way I can – contradictory view of what Charlie Sykes had just said about Paul Ryan.
Please do.
Paul Ryan is not a disappointment. Paul Ryan is a hero and a champion of Wisconsin. Paul Ryan may very well be the greatest human being to come out of the state of Wisconsin. He was straddled with incredible difficulty in the challenges that he had all throughout the Obama era and with the Donald Trump era. He did a magnificent job managing 1,000 cats going in a million directions and brought it across the finish line in such an incredible way for such a young person. And I would quite say, contrary to Charlie Sykes, people like Charlie Sykes sit up in their ivory towers and they look down on the small people of Wisconsin and America like we are too ignorant or not educated enough to understand the nuances of politics and their poised conservative perch that they sit on. We're trying here to survive down here. We're not making large salaries. We're barely scraping by, barely making it. And the thing with Donald Trump was, when your house is on fire, you really don't care if the fireman was drooling on some woman that wasn't his wife in the bar the night before. All you're interested in is, can you put out the fire? My child's on the third floor.
And it sounds,
and that's how we saw America.
It sounds as though, thank you, Art, it sounds as though you feel that Paul Ryan did a good job. We, of course, are admiring of Charlie Sykes, but interested in what you have to say. Kim Alfani, I wonder, what would you have described as the state of play for Republicans looking ahead to the midterm elections before this big announcement came?
Like I said before, I think it's the same. It, you know, any party in power has to fight very hard in a midterm election, Donald Trump or not. So we have that in front of us. I do think we have some policy points that we can run on. I do think, you know, the advice I would give as a consultant is run the race in your state, in your district that is needed to be talked about in the way people want to.
So almost as though there's a generic president. Like, let's not talk about that.
I think so. I think Donald Trump has made himself a generic president. I said that earlier, that I think he's almost like a third party. But
isn't that the sort of the definition of not being a generic president? I mean, he's forcing, these schisms within the party to be much more evident, it would seem. And he's also doing it in a way that we haven't seen in quite some time.
He is. But in terms of policy and running for Congress, I think if you lay out your plan and say, I'm for these tax cuts, I'm for this, you know, and it dovetails with your district, you're going to win.
We've been hearing a lot, you know, at NPR, other news organizations, from people on the Hill, and they're describing a little less buoyant approach. They're describing a little bit more of a white knuckle look at this. Lisa Desjardins, I'm thinking about this, and you're wondering, you know, it's almost as though there are three possibilities here. Mm-hmm. There's a credible or decent chance the Republicans can hold on. There's the question of whether Paul Ryan just signed the death warrant for Republican hopes in November, or whether he's really signing the death certificate, acknowledging the reality that was already there. Mm-hmm. Where do the people that you're talking about inside the Republican Party in both chambers, how do they look at what November is shaping up to be, particularly in light of what Paul Ryan has done?
There is not a lot of optimism that Republicans will hold on to the House at this point. It is not a completely lost cause. You know, there are still time. Many things can happen, including some recognition of tax cuts hitting people's paychecks. That is really the great Republican hope right now. However, there's also the president himself, who is an X factor and who could complicate things further for Republicans. I don't think that most Republicans believe that Ryan's announcement is a death warrant. I do think they admit that it doesn't help them. You know, that it doesn't look good to have the leader of the House announcing he's leaving, that he's walking away. But I do also think if you talk to political operatives around the country, Democrats and Republicans, it is Trump who probably is a larger factor than Paul Ryan. Paul Ryan does not help. Nancy Pelosi is someone that Republicans will probably go after even more now. There's a question of whether or not that will backfire in some districts. But I think all of this, there's something symbolic and more happening today. Paul Ryan announced his retirement yesterday. Today, David, is the swearing-in ceremony for Connor Lamb, a Democrat who won in a special election in a district where the president won by 19 points. That's such an incredible flip in just a few months, and here is Paul Ryan swearing that Democrat in today. So that's symbolic, but it's also more than that for Democrats.
So we have this son of Janesville, Wisconsin, announcing he will return home at the end of his tenure in January. He will. He says he's probably leaving politics forever. It's a real moment. It gives us an insight into the Republican Party and the elections ahead. I want to thank the two of you for your time today. Lisa Desjardins covers Congress for the PBS NewsHour. Lisa, thanks so much.
Oh, great show. Thank you.
And Kim Alfano, Republican strategist and president and CEO of Alfano Communications. Kim, thank you so much for your time.
Thanks.
You can continue the conversation and get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. And you can follow us on Twitter and find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. I'm David Folkenflik, and this is On Point.